And so our students are learning about these concepts. We hear about critical race theory in our schools. Well, here it is right in front of you. And almost every single lesson had some sort of element of critical race theory. I mean, there was even a slide on Marxism. And these are like interactive slide presentations that were given to the students. So this wasn't like the teacher's plans or whatever. This is what the students actually got. Like, for example, I got a gift from my district for being black, a black teacher. And I get this gift, and it's only for black educators. And it's just, it was just such a pandering gift. And because I didn't accept it, I got attacked, you know, like, because I didn't accept this gift that had stickers in it that said, I love being black. It also had a Black Educators Matter mask. I decided that, you know, this needs to be exposed.
Ladies, gentlemen, welcome back to Black and Blurred.
Hi.
That's Darren.
That's me.
I'm Brandon.
You know what? I forgot to point out, we were just chopping it up with our guests in the back room, in the green room. Mm-hmm. We're going to bring her on soon. But I was actually triggered earlier, right before the episode, right before you got here, actually. Mm. And so I'm going to point it out really quickly. I'm sure we're going to talk about it when she comes on. But you've seen this article. I'm going to pull it up. This article from the Wall Street Journal. Wait, where is it? Here it is. It's official. It says, we can pretty much treat COVID like the flu now.
Yay. So glad we figured it out.
You know how much, but I'm not going to dive into it.
No.
Guys, we got a great episode
for
you today.
Yeah, because COVID can go forever. 3-4 years.
We've got a great episode, man. But I was triggered because there's so much you went through trying to tell people the truth about how to actually think about this. But we're going to talk about it because we have a great guest.
All the money that these companies spent in signage telling you where to walk.
With the footsteps.
Anybody walk on the footsteps in Walmart?
Yeah.
Insane.
I'm sure people did. Guys, we've got Carly Fontanilla with us on Black and Blurred.
Hmm.
Former public school teacher in California. Lord, what a battle that is.
Yeah.
I don't even, she'll tell us all about it. She's founder of the Exodus Institute, a K-12 online school. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that and sharing that information with you guys because it's for Patriot families. And we know a lot of people are concerned about what they're going to do with their children. But that's the good work that she's doing. And she's going to come on and tell us all about it. She's at about over 320,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
So, and here she is spending time with us. Guys, welcome Carly Fontanilla on Black and Blurred. Oh, I clicked the wrong thing.
Oh,
there it is. Boom.
There I am.
There we are. Carly, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I actually prefer doing podcasts like this than like a Fox News interview or Dr. Phil. Actually, I've said no to a lot of those this last year because it's just not my thing. I'm not here to become a public figure.
Yeah.
I really just like to have conversations with people about what's going on in our world and coming up with solutions. That's what we can do on podcasts.
Mm.
And thank you for having
me.
It's an honor to be here with you guys.
Oh,
the two
thank you.
Black male conservatives, Christians. Mm-hmm. We are rare.
It is growing.
We're a growing number.
We most certainly are. Yeah. We most certainly are. So you started, I want people to get the whole story so they can feel what brought about you guys starting this school, because you were once a public school teacher. I want to hear about that because, oh my gosh.
Yeah, no.
My mother-in-law is a public school teacher. I'm a product of public schools, so I've been there. Baltimore City Public Schools. So tell us. Well, start from the beginning. Who are you, Carly? Who is Carly?
Well, my mom's white. My dad's Jamaican.
Okay.
So I get a lot of hate on that, too.
Because
apparently Jamaican's no longer black anymore. As long as you're if you're on the left, Jamaican is black.
Right.
But if you're on the right, Jamaican's not black.
Oh, man. Well, Darren, my sister-in-law is white, so Darren's kids are biracial. They're all sellouts to me. They're all sellouts.
And, oh, yeah, exactly. Completely. And the whole biracial thing, too, right now is real big. Like, there's a lot of talk about that, and I get a lot of hate for that as well. Anyways, I am a product of modern America where a black and white person can get together and have children, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be fighting against that. We shouldn't be demonizing that. And raised by my mom, and I'm close with both of my stepdad and my real dad. So my biological dad, they're both black men. I love them. Yeah. We're close. Musicians. So my family is reggae musicians.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my dad's a drummer and my stepdad plays the guitar, and they're older now, but in the 90s, they were big in reggae. You don't make a lot of money, though. So even though they were reggae stars,
there's a lot of dispensaries hanging around.
I know.
That's true. Back then it was illegal, so it was a little harder to make money off of that, too.
Right.
Anyways, I always wanted to work with children, and I love children. I'm the oldest of seven.
Wow.
And yeah, I'm the oldest of seven, and I wanted to do juvenile justice at first. I really don't like seeing young people committing a crime that destroys the rest of their life. And especially like a 16-year-old. I mean, you know how dumb teenagers are.
Right.
They make so many mistakes, and I wanted to be there to fight for them, to help them get the, you know, to change their lives and get out of this course and not spend the rest of their life in prison. That was my goal, was to become a lawyer and in juvenile justice. And so I got my BA in law and society. And then I was studying for the LSAT and I was looking into going to law school, and I prayed about it. I started sitting in courtrooms. I would go to courtrooms. And first of all, there's no windows in courtrooms.
Yeah. That's depressing.
Yeah. It's depressing. And you're just inside all day, and there is injustice in our justice system. And it doesn't have to do with skin color. It has to do with
money.
Oh yeah.
Always.
OJ. I mean, OJ. Yeah, right. What color is he?
Absolutely.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, killed.
OJ did it.
OJ did it.
OJ did it.
And he thinks he did it. That's how crazy he is.
He's
doing bits.
He wrote a book called If I Did It.
If I Did It.
Unreal.
Heard it. Yeah.
Unreal.
Okay. So I watched that in eighth grade. In fact, at my school, we spent time in class to watch his sentencing.
Wow.
Like, to watch the verdict.
The verdict.
Did it? Do you remember it feeling racially divisive during that time?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, it wasn't. It was there, but it's not like how it is now. It would be all about race right now. I don't even know who even knows what would happen if that case was today.
Yeah, right.
I have no idea how that would have happened.
True.
Anyways, so I sitting in these courtrooms, and I'm realizing that people with money get off. They have an easier time. Public defenders aren't that great. They have way too many cases. And it's great that we live in a country where you even get a public defender, because most countries don't have that, you know, where you can have a lawyer for free. But, you know, here's the thing. If you don't have the money, there's a lot of injustice financially.
Yeah.
And then, so I was already feeling like maybe this isn't the path for me. So I prayed about it. I go on to Yahoo, because that was a thing back then.
Yahoo.
Yeah.
Who are you, Google?
How old are you guys? I'm 41.
That's 37.
That's my email.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you look young for your age.
Yeah. 34.
Okay. So, 41. So yeah, you know Yahoo then.
Still my email.
Okay, so I'm going on. Still your email?
It is. Boomer over here.
Yes. So I still have my Yahoo email. It's my junk mail where I get like.
Same.
Yes, exactly. So Yahoo, I go on Yahoo. I remember I prayed to God about clarity about whether or not I should be a lawyer. And I'm like, and I go on, and the first thing that comes up is number one jobs for depression is the headline. And they say that number two is lawyer. I think number one was dentist. Number two was lawyer. And I'm coming as someone who has been through a lot in my life, who has dealt with, I don't need to be depressed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what's the next best option? How can I help these young people become a teacher? I'm going to become a teacher. And so I went, got my master's in education. I have two credentials. I taught for 15 years. My first job was in Compton, California.
Ooh, dangerous minds.
Teaching black and brown kids in the middle of the projects, pretty much. Well, the projects was behind our school. And we would have, it looked like a fortress, because it only had one way in, one way out. Mm. These kids are beautiful. I absolutely love them. Parents were messed up coming in off drugs, picking up their kids.
Yeah.
Fourth graders. I taught fourth graders and I kept them to a high standard. In fact, I had taken over the class for a teacher that lasted 2 months. The kids drove her nuts.
Yeah. Out of college.
Pretty much. Right. Yes, exactly. I came in and I had these high standards for these students and they rose to the standards. And so even when I was on the left, I never had this idea that Black and brown kids needed the standards lowered for them.
Mm.
I don't think that they're fully capable of meeting the standards, yeah. And it hurts them to have the standards lowered.
Right.
So, top 15 eventually moved back to Central California, and a majority of my career was in Salinas, which is known as the gang capital of California. It's a lot of Mexican kids, and I taught the English learners and the low readers, high school and middle school. I taught high school and middle school. Then the pandemic hit. Then Black Lives Matter riots came, and I started getting these lessons in my inbox because we were teaching online. For example, there was a lesson comparing the Black Lives Matter movement to the Civil Rights Movement that I was supposed to teach for my homeroom. And in the lesson, it was a PowerPoint, and in the lesson there was a point that they made where they said, if you don't support Black Lives Matter, you would not have supported the Civil Rights Movement. And I was like, excuse me. Yeah. And I was a tenured teacher and I had a really good reputation in my district. So I just didn't teach the lessons. I just didn't even touch them. But I know there's a lot of teachers that feel pressure to do this. And then I also saw lessons that contained critical race theory, like very, very clearly contained critical race theory while the mainstream media was lying to the American people about critical race theory.
Right.
And I decided to expose those lessons online. Mm-hmm. And eventually I resigned, even though I didn't want to. I love my job, but they're a Black conservative has a really, if you're outspoken, you cannot be a public school teacher.
No, 100%.
Yeah.
We've had a couple, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Go ahead.
Oh, we've had a couple of, I'm actually just one on the episode.
I didn't get that.
We did it. Be quiet, Siri.
yes, I know. It's listening to us.
I know.
We've had a, someone in education on the podcast who's kind of like waging war in silence, really, because he has more of an influential role higher up at a school in the country, and it's a pretty predominant school, and so he's able to wage war kind of like in secret, but still wage war. But the reality is, I think the two jobs that you are not allowed in this country in specific places to do well with principal is teaching and policing. If you go to an inner city and you want to be a cop who is faithful to the badge and to the community, you're not going to have a good time. If you want to be a teacher who is faithful to actually raising children up with a high standard like you talked about, and valuing them enough to hold them to that standard, it's going to be a hard time. But now you don't even need those kind of passive principles to stand in. Now you have active teaching, like you're talking about, that you either have to accept or reject. And I can't imagine what that journey was like to have to continuously say, hey, nah, I'm not doing this. Hey, what is this? Hey, what is this? I mean, did you have anybody in your corner at all?
There was a couple teachers, I would say one or two teachers, and we always had to kind of talk in code with each other. And it was to also find those teachers was difficult as well. Mm. But I'm a person that really has a hard time being quiet. And there was a point where they were really pushing me to the point where I like, okay, I can't be silent about this anymore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, this is getting ridiculous. Like, we had a teacher that had Trump as a clown on his door. Mm-hmm. There was a teachers who when Biden won, they were flipping out in the chat and just talking about and constantly putting down MAGA, constantly demonizing and then also just lying to the children about who Republicans are, who the people on the right are. Yeah. And I don't even push Republican that much because I think there's a lot of corruption on both sides.
Right. Yeah, we agree.
But the values of the average Republican voter, I'm not talking about the politicians.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I'm talking about the values of the average Republican voter is totally, totally demonized by the left.
Oh, yeah.
And wrong. The average Republican voter is not some white supremacist, you know, just cares about their guns. Like they're not, that's not who they are,
right.
You know? And so they, but they, that's how they paint them to the children, to kids. And so I felt, I was tired of it. I could no longer be silent. And that's why I decided to resign, is I was tired of living in fear because I was starting to speak up on a lot online. And I had to email my principal and tell him, hey, I'm speaking out against Black Lives Matter right now, the movement and the nonprofit Black Lives Matter, the, because the whole thing is messed up. It's all together. It's all together. Yeah. And people try to do this whole, like, I support the movement, but not the organization.
No, it's all garbage.
It's the same thing.
The movement is the child of the organization.
Yes. Yeah. And the movement is based on a false premise.
Correct.
So,
correct.
Anyways, so I started, I emailed him and I told him, hey, I'm doing this. Thank God my principal is a libertarian. I happened to get the one, like, I think he was. That was my guess on him because he was like, I got your back. Don't worry. Like, I'm not going to let them go after you.
Yeah.
And so I had people calling the district trying to get me fired. And then but pretty soon I just was like, I have to get out of here. I need to resign and move. And I moved to Florida. But yeah, it was a crazy year. I was living in fear that whole year when I was really speaking up against Black, because that year was hot with Black Lives Matter.
It was. Was that 2020 or?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. 2020,
it's a figment of our imagination. We actually did an episode, I don't know, 3 episodes ago.
Yeah.
And on the surface, we were talking about Christian nationalism, but we didn't do a deep dive on Christian nationalism. We were talking about what has made it a buzzword again today and how forgetful we are about the things that led up to people who would even thirst for something that could either be appropriately or misappropriately identified as Christian nationalism.
Yes.
It's like you have to know what the cause of this was so that you can know why there are people who would even reach out to, I mean, want a government that embodies Christian values. Because, I mean, just like everything else, we're going to just forget it. We're going to be, you know, what do we have in our faces now? Puff Daddy, Diddy.
I know.
And that's all in our faces. Actually, not really as much. But we're just going to be give something to us to forget that everything we went through is what we went through. And then the next thing is going to come. And we're going to respond the same exact way.
Exactly.
It's like what I dressed.
Well, we already have it. We have our original founding is based on Christianity and the Bible.
Right.
And part of it is freedom. And that's the problem, though. You have to have a moral society to have the freedom that was given to us.
That's right.
And I think that there's, the agenda to take away morals is also to take away our freedom.
Correct.
I mean, look at what's happening in New York right now, the subways. They just had to put the military there in the New York subways.
Like, people because
they defunded the police there. Yeah. And it's crazy. So now they have to bring in this reaction that's really like there's literal military officers with their guns in the New York subways right now. Like,
you don't even find that so odd that you can watch with your eyes New York actually turning into Gotham City.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
And people will still go out and vote for what perpetuates that.
Yeah. And it's the fear mongering of the right. Yeah. And that's why I voted left. It was not necessarily, ooh, I think the Democrats are so great. It was more like, ooh, the Republicans, they're scary. We don't want to vote for them, right? Yeah. It was more this, and that's why they do that. Because, I mean, who would vote for Biden nowadays?
I know.
Unless it's an absolute, I'm scared of Trump, I'm going to vote for Biden, which I think was what happened in 2020. They voted for him out of fear.
Mm-hmm. At your school, did you have, how many white American teachers were there?
I would say it was a lot, even though the majority of our population, our students were about 80% Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that our staff was about half and half white, half Mexican, very few black and brown, black people, very few black.
Interesting.
There was probably about eight or nine of us in the whole district.
And that's the school you were at in that clip earlier when you were like, they gave out
the black teacher gift.
That's insane.
Yeah, so that was my first viral video. And it was just, okay, so what happened was I was making the satire. My first viral video is myself. I was making the satire and I got that stupid mask. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to make satire with this mask, this Black Educators Matter mask. I'm going to impersonate a woke teacher. And then I wanted to explain where I got the mask. So I'm like, hey guys, I got this weird gift from my district. It has honey body wash. It has I Love Being Black sticker. It had a Black Educators Matter mask. It had some expired Avon. It had like a black, It had a black power fist with like an Africa in the back.
That's
I mean, it was just, it was like, there's this like comedian who does the racist gift basket.
Yeah, man.
That's what it was.
What? So they actually only gave it to only the black.
KFC gift card.
No, it didn't.
No, there wasn't a KFC. Oh,
I was about to go crazy.
No, it wasn't.
Like, this is an Office episode, right?
No.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't that bad, but it was close to that.
I mean, well, your boy Biden had dinner with the black family eating chicken and stuff.
Church's chicken, man.
It's a joke.
Yeah, it really is. So,
and that's what it felt like to me when I got this gift, because it was funny because I got an email from my superintendent.
Yeah.
Because we were still online at the time, and he was like, we know that the black teachers are feeling trauma over George Floyd's death. And I was like, I'm feeling trauma over the Black Lives Matter movement. Like, that had me on my knees for 3 weeks praying.
Yeah.
Like, that was so scary. I've never seen my people in my country react like that in such a violent way.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't get it on the mainstream news. You had to go on Twitter to see what was actually happening.
You had to.
I mean, there was a young black boy in a Trump hat that got beat up.
Yeah.
You didn't see that.
No,
no, no.
I mean, the security officer David Thorne. Yes. Yeah. He was
a retired police officer.
He was
patrolled. Just went to go help his friend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Murdered.
And the civil rights movement, whenever an incident happened in the civil rights movement, whenever there was something negative that happened that wasn't part of their mission of nonviolence, they actually stopped and they reorganized. And they would take like weeks and go back in the churches and figure it out. And that's where I'm like, the comparing the Black Lives Matter movement to the civil rights movement is so wrong.
Yeah,
like, it was completely different. And so he sent me this email and I'm like, okay, what's this gift? Maybe it's a gift card. Sure. Whatever. But it's weird that they're giving a gift to black teachers.
Yeah.
And first time I ever got a gift from my district, by the way, like that. I mean, I've been working for this district for a while.
Yeah.
And the first time I get a gift is because of the color of my skin. Mm. Anyways, I go to pick it up and I'm just floored at how cheesy and pandering it is. I mean, it's just bad.
Can you imagine what that meeting was like?
Yeah.
It's just like, who's sitting around going, oh man, we got to do something. What do we do? Quick. Someone get a mask.
Yeah.
Print it out. Like, they made
that. Yes, they made that. That's custom made.
They customized a Black Educators Matters mask, and they put a bunch of other black things. There's Africa. I got out of Africa.
I know.
And some red, black, and green, and throw it into a bag and give it to black people.
Yeah.
Yep.
They thought,
that's exactly what it was.
This will help.
And you know what's sad about it is I got so much hate for that video.
I bet.
People telling me that I hate my own race. Oh, because I don't want to wear an I Love Being Black sticker. I hate my own race. Like, that
you
is
know
so
what's
silly.
So wild?
Like,
black people are the only, not at this sweeping generalization, but I mean, like, you don't find other ethnicities holding people hostage to their ethnicity. Hey, you got to think this way or do this thing or you're not this thing.
Yeah,
you're right.
What is that?
Right.
Yeah. So now you got to wear that dumb pin or you lose your ethnic heritage. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
You got to vote Democrat.
You got to vote Democrat or you lose your ethnic heritage. Mm-hmm. That is so permeated in our society that the president felt comfortable saying it.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I do think I do. And this, you'll never see me say that I don't believe in systemic racism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just don't believe in the way that it's being taught in colleges 100%. By those professors.
Yeah.
I do believe that there is an attack on Black America. Yeah. There is a systemic attack on Black
America.
We
talk about it all the time.
Yes. And it is. And I do also think that we have lost. There's something to be said about being proud of your ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sometimes will go to, like, I love going to, at least in California, they used to have this great Irish, Greek. It was a Greek fair. Mm. And it was just beautiful. There's Greek music, there's Greek food, there's da-da-da-da. And Black America will make this excuse like, well, we were kidnapped and we can't have our own culture and da-da-da. Yeah. I'm like, no, yes, you can.
Yes, you can,
yeah.
Yeah, and why are we adopting this ghetto, stupid culture?
Right.
Like,
oftentimes
I'll be told, oh, you're not invited to the cookout. I'm like, I don't want to go to the cookout.
Right.
Like, that thing is greasy food.
That's the thing.
There's drama. There's people fighting. There's horrible music. Like, we have the potential to have incredible culture.
I mean,
or this whole idea that, oh, well, white people forced their religion on us. Well, excuse me, Ethiopians had Christianity before the white Europeans.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's silly.
It's like, lie after lie. I mean, mm-hmm. think about it. It can get very heartbreaking when you think about just how steeped in falsehood this, what we call black culture is. I'm sure you're familiar mm-hmm. with Thomas Sowell. And
yes.
Have you read his Black Rednecks, White Liberals?
I have read it in pieces because his stuff is deep. It's a lot. Definitely, you can, his books, you can skip around.
It's a buffet.
A buffet. And read and get you. You can get a lot from just one of,
But even this idea of black culture that we pride ourselves in regarding the, you know, demand for respect. And if you don't give me respect, then it's going to turn into some type of duel or somebody's life is going to be lost. It's like that existed in the early parts of the United States when it comes down to Southern whites who immigrated from the Southern Isles of Britain.
Yeah.
And he goes through story after story where this BET culture is replicated early on, this antecedent of what we call black culture. And but the picnic you're talking about, if black people did have a picnic like that Greek thing, it was just called Freaknik in Atlanta.
Gosh.
That's what we celebrate.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And if we don't do that, and we actually do have some type of cultured aspect of it where we, you know, have history and we have some fun and there's families and there's men and women and children, they'll call it white.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because black Americans don't do things that flourish, apparently. But,
and what's sad, and this is something that I'm seeing right now that it's actually breaking my heart, is because it's getting bad. It really is bad.
It is.
Is now I am seeing more racism from the right. I'm seeing more racism from white people towards black people.
Yeah.
And it's because of what's happening right now. It is,
right, right.
And I think that they're seeing so, I mean, if you look at the statistics on interracial violence, which they will say is a white supremacist talking point, it's facts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really sad because I'm now seeing people legitimately getting scared of black people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want that. Right. I don't want that for this country.
Right.
You know, it just breaks my heart. Like, I don't want, I don't, I mean, even I, if I go to an area that's like in the South, that's full, a lot of black Americans, because I have been threatened so much by left-leaning black America, there is a part of me that's like, man, if they're willing to beat up their own, if they're willing to beat up, like there's a story that came out of these eight black Americans that went and took a friend of theirs and they tortured her and then hung her. This story just came out.
What in the world?
They lynched her. Yeah. Crazy. It's a horrible story, but it didn't make the mainstream news. Anyways, Right Winged Angel on Instagram. He's really good about sharing the news.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if they're willing to do that to their friends, what are they going to do to a black conservative? Get me alone somewhere. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that just breaks my heart because I taught them as kids.
I sent you a message some time ago. I remember you posted something and it was in that vein where it was like, this reality is kind of rising up around us. And I sent you a message about a good, well, one, I was like, hey, get a gun and become proficient with it. And you can do that in your home where there's like what we call dry firing systems where you can get familiar with your gun. You can shoot it, but it not shoot a bullet out, but you can learn how to shoot it with these systems and learn how to aim before you even go to the range. But it's a good equalizer.
But the thing is, here's the thing for me with, I actually did a whole presentation on this. The reason why I fully support gun rights, but I am not personally a gun owner because both my grandpas died by my grandpa on my black side. He was shot. Killed.
Wow.
And my grandpa on my white side, he killed himself with a gun.
Yeah.
And then I would never want personally, and I don't have any, I actually want to get to a place where I could have security if I get any bigger, but I've actually prayed to God about this. I'm like, I kind of want to just stay where I'm at right now. I'm happy with where I'm at right now. I don't want to be in fear of my fellow man.
Yeah.
Anyways, I wouldn't want to shoot someone,
yeah,
you know, and there's some people that just don't have it in them that they could not do it. And the thing is, because I worked with so many kids, I've worked, my whole career has been with kids and black kids and Mexican kids. And I've seen them get twisted. I've seen a child come in innocent, beautiful child. And then they start listening to that garbage music. I had this one boy who was in ninth grade and he was the sweetest little black boy. I loved him. He was such a good boy in in his 12th grade year, him and his friend and a couple friends got a girl drunk and raped her.
Wow.
And I'm just like, to see that, that breaks my heart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he got so into that ghetto gangster. That music is horrible. The messages they're putting in their brains with that music. And I just saw him get twisted. And so I'm like, I feel like I couldn't do it because I see the child in everyone.
No, I was about to say, that's a gift. That's a spiritual gift.
It's a gift. And but I need someone who's willing to do that, who's near me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's a gift.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why it's a gift. Because when you were just talking about like even the reality of interracial violence, where people are now starting, white Americans are now starting to react to the violence and just the ideology that is being forced on them with a racist ideology or even a pseudo-racist ideology. You think about Birth of a Nation and how it was propaganda and it was shown in the White House, it was shown around, and then that's what influenced everybody's mentality to be able to accept something like the Ku Klux Klan.
Yes.
But we don't need Birth of a Nation now because now we have cell phone recordings of people going crazy in their own neighborhoods. Black people going crazy, doing crazy things.
And then the fact that it doesn't make the news and then there isn't justice too really makes people want to take it into their own hands.
Right,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
Right.
So there's accounts on Twitter that are just like, I'm just exposing how bad Black America is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's sad.
It is.
I'm like,
it really is.
Yeah.
It really is. Because I see some of those comments on right wing. It's a big account. He can't control the comment section. None of us can.
Yeah.
But you see people who jump on the comment section and they're, you know, you see the ideology like, yeah, they're all like that. I'm like, all right, pump the brakes a little bit, bro. I mean,
I've seen it a lot more this last year, last couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, I have my satire character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my satire character is a leftist that wears a mask. And that satire character has gone viral several times. I mean, even like Jordan Peterson, Ben Shapiro, they've all reacted to her as if she's real.
Yeah, that's funny.
I did see Ben Shapiro like do a whole video about him. Yeah. That's satire.
Yeah, he didn't know. He didn't know. That's funny. Wild.
So I actually know what it's like to get hate from the left. Right. Mm-hmm. So I know what it's like to get messages from them that are, and of course my satire character says the craziest stuff and I think it's real because the left is really crazy right now. And so I know what it's like to get hate from the left and hate from the right. And for almost a year, I was able to say, I've never been called a racial slur by anyone on the right, but on the left, I've been called a racial slur. I can't even tell you how many times. Hundreds.
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds of times.
That's the way it's always been.
Right.
Yeah. White people, Black people.
Yeah, that's
mainly
the way it's
Black,
always been.
But there are some white.
We've gotten white people.
Yeah. House N-word is common.
We've gotten white. Well,
recently, the last 6 months or so, my satire character got a couple racial slurs from people on the right.
And I'm like, it's happening.
Exactly. You know,
it's
and it
happening.
Just breaks. Like, ah.
Because it's like, the question is,
sick of it.
What do you do to that? Because like what you just said, they are sick of it. But what do you do to try to temper that? To temper that response? I don't think there's anything you can really do.
You go back to what we did originally when the slaves were first freed. And we had to change the mindset of people about Black America, especially in the South. And during Jim Crow, too. And there was two, and I'm sure you guys have read this history because you guys are good, well-learned Black history, Black Americans, Black conservatives, but there was the Booker T. Washington School of Thought.
Yeah.
And then there was the W.E. Du Bois. And Booker T. Washington was all about showing white America that Black America can make it without their help, that we're respectable citizens, that you guys can accept us into society because we're respectable, we can contribute. And people like George Washington Carver, I have a lesson on him in my school, Exodus Institute. He did more for race relations in that time than almost any other Black American. And all he would do is he would go to these, and they actually hired him to do this. He would go to these speaking engagements in the South that were full of white, good old boy types. And he would, instead of talking about, oh, this is what you guys need to do for Black America or whatever, he would just go in and he would share about his experiments and he would share his character and he would just talk about, you know, science. And he had this way of talking about nature and science that just made you love God's creation. And it would start with the audience being like, who's this black guy, know-it-all, you know, to the end, standing ovation. For this little short, sweet, kind-hearted, and it did so much for race relations. And so there is something to be said about, you know, just earning respect as just good human beings and good contributors to society. And that's just not happening right now.
It's not. Even to be a Debbie Downer a little bit, that picture you just painted about what was happening with George Washington Carver to the white audience, actually for the past, I don't know how many years now, at least a decade, has been happening for the leftist audience, where the black speaker is standing before the white audience and saying, this is the trial, this is our victimhood, and this is the way. And then they sent them out with marching orders of the black experience. And then what happens is little old, you know, now in the know, white American meets Brandon and Darren. And then they feel audacious enough to like treat us terribly because of the way we think. It's like, well, no, I know all about black people now. That's not how it's supposed to be.
Right. Yeah.
You're not supposed to say these things. I've heard it. I read the blogs.
Yep.
I moved to DC.
Okay. So you fled in wisdom. You fled in wisdom from California, and you fled swinging. You took some swings and you left some impressions. And then you bopped and went to Florida, where it's safe.
For now. Yeah, exactly. We just found out that 43 airports in this country received flights of migrants, illegal immigrants, from the Biden administration. There's an app. So he created an app that the U.S. government created an app. So 300,000 illegals were flown secretly into the country. Into 43 different airports in America.
That's insane.
And all they had to do was apply on this app for asylum.
Wow.
And they were flown in from their countries. This isn't even people crossing the border. This was from January of last year to December. And the only reason why we know about this is because lawyers sued for through the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah.
And and so I've actually noticed an uptick of illegals in Florida, and I'm wondering if we got some of those. And I really think that's they're gonna put away COVID. They're over Black America.
I mean, that's done.
So Biden and Kamala said Black Lives Matter and George Floyd like 27 times when they were running. How many times have they said Black Lives Matter since they've been in office?
Not ever. Now, Kamala did invite HBCU students to listen to, what's the girl's name?
Oh, Sexy Red.
There you go, yeah. Gosh. HBCU students were at the White House listening to Sexy Red, you know, their role model. So
beautiful.
There's that.
Yeah, we thought Lil' Kim was bad.
I know.
Remember that?
They got Lil' Kim looking like Mother Teresa.
This is terrible music. It's terrible.
It's so bad. I mean, at least there was some like something good about that music back then. At least it had like rhythm or something.
Yeah, right.
But this music now is just
complete trash. Garbage.
Yeah,
it's complete garbage. So what inspired the starting of the Exodus Institute? How long after going to Florida did that happen, and what went into that?
I have to give a lot of credit for my husband for that, because I have a very limited mindset. And that's something that I will say is really true in a lot of minority children, a lot of black and brown kids, is they have a limited mindset. And that's why they want to put that victim mentality on them to give them even more of a limited mindset. I can't make it in life because this, that, and the other, or the white man, or everyone's out to get me, blah, blah, blah. And so I actually have a lot of that myself. And I wouldn't say it's because of my skin color. It's more just the way I was raised. And, you know, I was over 200 pounds in high school. And I was put in in ninth grade, I was put in a special ed class. I always thought, so I had a lot of kind of, and so I never thought I could be a small business owner. I was like, I thought I made it, that I got my master's in education. I'm a teacher. And I just never had that entrepreneur spirit, that big, like, go get them type person. And so my husband was like, we should start a school. And I was like, no, because I'm terrified of
being a giant business
for myself. Yeah, exactly. And we'll just get another teaching job. got a teaching job here in Florida. And sadly, this job I got was at a Christian school, and the principal was very COVID scared.
Oh,
and she was a very unhealthy lady, and she got COVID herself.
I see.
I mean, she's a lady that drinks those big, giant, big gulps every single
day. No. There's always one of those in the school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so it was pretty bad for her. Like, COVID was bad. And the way they treated people in hospitals, too, the ventilators.
That was awful. Yeah.
So she was, like, overly paranoid. She didn't want the students to sit together outside. Actually, this was middle school too. Can't sit together outside. She, you know, was every time someone, a student tested positive or was around someone who was positive, they were sent home, and I had to come up with lessons for that child that was home and the children, and I would have to teach them at the same time with one on a laptop.
What?
So for the first time, I actually resigned mid-year. I was like 3 months in, and I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do this anymore. I got to leave. Mm. And I told my husband, you know what? I'm sorry for not acting in faith. Let's start our own school.
Mm.
And that's when we decided to open up Exodus Institute. So we cashed out our California teacher retirements and used that money to start the school. And it took us about a year to get everything together to launch it. And then we launched it. And we have 180 students now.
Wow.
But yeah, we do. It's a good amount of students. It's just not quite profitable yet. I have to do a lot of extra work. Part of it is because our enrichment program, we have a fully accredited program, and that has fully accredited teachers. And to hire good teachers, you pretty much put all your money into that.
Right. Yeah.
And then, and then our enrichment program is, I need to do better at advertising it, but it's basically lessons that counter the left.
Mm-hmm.
And we have about 80 students in that, and it's only $20 a month.
Wow.
Yeah. And that is lessons like, in fact, just before I came onto this podcast, the reason why I was a little late is, I was recording a lesson about the complete history of slavery, and it's going to be in 7 parts. It's going into all of the facts about slavery, like Thomas Sowell, that got, that are left out of when they teach slavery in America.
What's the website where people can get a lot of information on this?
ThinkExodus.org. And we're actually getting ready to rebrand the enrichment program to have its own name called Young Patriots Academy. And we're going to up the price to $29, but for now it's $20. And it has over 75 lessons that are on demand.
Mm.
And I have lessons like what happened in Venezuela about the socialism collapse that happened in that country. And now we're taking
trying
all
to do it right. Trying to do it all.
And then I have a lesson called Debunking Black Lives Matter. So where students learn about the statistics behind just everything to do with policing.
Mm-hmm.
We have lessons like George Washington Carver, where they learn about George Washington Carver. Yeah. And they're very well taught. The students have notes that they take. In fact, I have one of the worksheets right here where they're learning define equity, define equality.
All this different is very types. Intentional.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to be very necessary.
It is necessary. I'm just not a businesswoman, so I'm working on. I have by the grace of God, for some reason, I've been able to break through this last year and really gain a nice following. I'm just not good at advertising to them.
I'm not. I don't think we are either.
No.
Yeah, yeah. You guys have a great podcast, by the way.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So we need to get it together. And it's that limiting mindset.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think about how these nasty dudes in makeup, and they're like pushing themselves out there, and they're getting their brand deals, and they're you know, shining. They're shining like crazy. And yet we're sitting here going, ooh, nobody's gonna like me and I'm lame, right? No, we have to put ourselves out there.
It's
And there's not enough time left too, especially with the way censorship is about to go down.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah, if you notice all of the big black conservative voices that are out.
Mm-hmm.
All of them were able to get big during Trump.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No one has been able to break through since then.
No.
Right.
Because the censorship is nuts.
Yeah.
And during Trump, you could go on YouTube and you could watch InfoWars.
You could.
There was a time when he was still on. That's actually how I watched
him. Yeah.
And there's you could go. Yeah,
I don't think
the censorship now.
YouTube is not even where I even go to try to get say we're about to do an episode and I'm like, oh, what was this one factoid about this thing? Like, we know not to go to YouTube because let's say it's COVID, then anything related to it is going to be presented by some mainstream media outlet. Yeah. That's the only
conversation. Or it's been completely scrubbed.
Yeah,
like it's just not there.
Scrubbed thing. It's gone. Yeah. It's gone.
They so it's been really hard to break through with your voice this last 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And, but there is, I will say there are some ways to break through. When I started doing the leftist satire,
yeah,
guess what? It beats the algorithms.
Wow. Because
they don't know either.
They don't know. They don't know.
You're a genius.
As soon as I started doing that, my accounts started
growing.
You're
a genius.
Because I'm doing titles like Donald Trump's a racist.
Yeah.
They're going to let that go through.
Oh my gosh.
That's
damn.
Wild. That's what we got
to
do.
It's time to put on our trolling hats.
Yes. That's it.
Oh my goodness. That's it.
So what I recommend if you do want to do some satire, which actually we need a black male to do some satire.
We do.
Go on TikTok, watch some of the like black idolatry, horrible like white people. Let's come up with some nicknames for white people. And you guys should do one where it's like, let's come up with some nicknames for white people and have them just like be totally ridiculous. Like, you know, and just have that as a joke. Like I can't think of one off the top of my head, but like
Darren, you've got a white wife, man. We've got props now.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
This is true. This is true.
You've got props.
She's got to get to work.
You've got props. Oh. Just like how I have my white wife treat me during Black History Month. That's funny. Like every time she serves him, she kneels.
That's right.
Like, oh my goodness.
That's right.
Wow, we're missing gold.
This is a gold mine. This is a guess.
This is a gold mine. Yes. Oh my goodness.
And you know what? There's something to be said about satire. It does, you know, that killed satire, the SNL for McCain and Sarah Palin's campaign.
Yep.
When people Tina actually Fey thought that. Did Sarah Palin, that campaign was done.
Yeah. It was. Yep.
It was. That was like the,
yep.
You know?
It was.
And so there's something to be said about satire.
Definitely.
It really is effective.
I can't remember if we were talking about this on the air or not. Maybe. Were we talking about the beauty and necessity of satire
on the air?
That was before we started. You say talk about that again in the biblical reference that you highlighted too regarding.
Sure.
That.
Well, I've received some hate for my satire, especially from Christians, and some of them will unfollow, and I'm like, my account's not for you. And I will say that part of the reason this last year has been really hard for me. I had one of the hardest years of my adult life, and God has been convicting me to share more of my faith and share more of my Christian walk, because I have a very deep faith in the Lord. Like there is no shaking that.
Yeah.
I don't care if I end up in like a gutter somewhere. There's nothing like Jesus is real.
Yeah.
God is real. Like he has done so much for me in my life, and I'm only there because there's something he needs to teach me. Mm. Right. I had a really rough year. And when I first started posting, I was always posting Bible verses, always posting Christian stuff. And then I kind of stopped because there's a part of me that just wanted to protect myself. Mm. And that's not the one thing that you should not be protecting is your faith.
Your faith,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so God was really convicting me to share it more. And I started getting attacked just personally.
Wow.
And just going through a really, really hard year. And so, so I will say that I do need, I will say, this is me sharing what God has convicted me of, that the satire is just a means to point to him. And I'm not, if I'm bringing people into my account and having them follow me for the satire, and then I'm not pointing them to Christ, he's going to take that all away.
Amen.
So I'm just going to preface that. And that's part of the reason why I've kind of slowed down on the satire, because I haven't been pointing people to Christ. Mm. And I want to start doing that more and not let that be the focus of my account. It'll come back. Yeah. It'll come back. And I will always, I'm a goofball. So I'm always going to have that part of me. But, but I get a lot of hate for the satire when I do post it from Christians. Some of them say it's not Christ-like to mock people. And I tell them, you know, Elijah in the Bible, he made fun of gods. That's like saying Muslims, like that's like saying the Muslim God is on the toilet. You know what I'm saying? Like, imagine if we did that. People would be so insulted, right?
Christians.
So Elijah, when he was testing the various gods that the pagans were worshiping that were brought into Israel, right? Mm-hmm. And they were worshiping them too. And then there was the God of the Bible. Mm-hmm. They were trying to call down fire, right? Mm-hmm. Call down fire. You remember this story. Mm-hmm. And these pagan priests were doing all this cutting themselves and going crazy, trying to call down this fire.
what a
and
scene Elijah's that must, like, have been.
Must have been crazy.
Elijah's like, are your gods on the toilet? Right?
Maybe he's relieving himself.
Mocking their gods.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's, and the reality is young people are, they need to see when if something is so absurd, I'm not mocking something that isn't absurd. Yeah. I mean, this is like absurd stuff. You know, this is like and so when you're mocking something that's absurd, it's you're pointing out the absurdity of it.
That's right.
And that's what needs to happen. There's it's foolishness. That's we're living in a time of absolute foolishness.
They're lies.
Pointing it out as foolish, right? And so, but you know, but I will say it's very important to stay focused on your content and not get sidetracked. And that's what Satan wants. And I've allowed that to happen this last year. Mm. And so that's why I've kind of slowed down on the satire.
Well, that's I think that is mature and discerning of you to do that.
Oh God. Cause I mean, he was humbling me left and right.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, I need to get together.
Yeah. That'll definitely happen. I mean, I think what it was a year in when we kind of paused and realized, all right,
we hate a lot of things.
Yeah. We're angry. Like we're actually angry, and this needs to be a platform where we're drawing people to the truth and not having this violent catharsis of
because we started this podcast through COVID.
Yeah.
Like it was the middle of COVID. So we were just
And we live in Maryland. We live in Maryland.
Close to DC.
Oh, so you were right in the middle.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right.
Well, there's also righteous indignation.
There is.
There's table throwing. Jesus
that's
did
right.
that.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true.
But again, it has to be balanced.
That's right.
And that's where the spiritual discernment comes.
That's exactly right.
And I also say that there's a difference between your public voice and personal interaction.
We say the same.
Yes.
Go ahead. Uh-huh. Give it to them.
Yes. So when you are doing a public cry, that's very different than dealing with people personally.
100%.
Jesus in public cries. He would call Pharisees vipers, right?
Yeah.
But then when he had a Pharisee that wanted to meet with him one-on-one, how did he treat that Pharisee?
That's
he was
exactly
like, you
right.
viper, get out of my face.
Yeah.
No, he was treating them as an individual. Mm-hmm. And we have to make these public cries. We have to publicly condemn what's going on, because it's like Satan is trying to normalize sin. Mm. He's trying to make it so that we don't even know we're sinning. And that's the worst place to be.
That's exactly
right. Is that we don't even, and a whole generation that doesn't even know they're sinning, to where everything in their mind is continually evil, like as in the days of Noah.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening with this newest generation coming up. I mean, they are, I have had so many teachers contact me since I've left now public teaching for about 2 years. Mm. And I've had so many teachers contacting me being like, this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
It is no longer the same. These kids are not the same. There's just wickedness. Like, I know a fifth grade teacher that's having to deal with, all of her students are struggling with sexual stuff.
Yeah, that's
wild. And it wasn't like that 10, 20 years ago. Maybe she had one kid that was kind of off, but most of them were just kids.
Yeah.
And so they're really trying to make it, Satan is on a mission to make sin normalized, and we have to call it out and publicly condemn it.
Yeah.
But when you're interacting with someone one-on-one, when I'm interacting with a leftist one-on-one, that's a child of God.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
And we need to not be ashamed of making public cries condemning evil.
Amen. Yeah, well, I always say it's the difference between addressing principalities and persons.
Mm. There's a difference.
We wage war. We're Christians. Uh-huh. We have. So what people just witnessed on this podcast wasn't Black and Blurred and Kali like coincidentally having the same thought. We share the same spirit is what that is.
Oh, amen.
That's what you just witnessed. That's why that is. What's rising up in us is a desire to wage war on that which ought to be waged. Whatever.
What?
And that's why it's really also very important to be around people that have that same to get that confirmation,
because
you feel
exactly
so
right.
alone. It I felt is. So alone when I was in California.
Man.
But even Jesus on the cross wasn't alone.
Yeah, right. Man.
He was able to save someone
on the cross.
Yes. And what's amazing about that that person that was on the cross with him is that the fact that he called him Lord while he was literally dying on the cross.
Yeah.
The amount of faith that man had is incredible.
Right.
And how beautiful that was that for Jesus to have that on the cross with him. And so it's very important to find those that are like-minded so that you can have, like, just this conversation we're having is helping me.
It is.
You know?
Right.
Like,
It is. So, all right, we're going to give you an opportunity to be a businesswoman, because personally, I want to be able to support with your guys' school, and we want our listeners of the podcast to know how they can support your school. How can they give financially, specifically?
Well, I just wrote a children's book, so they don't even have to give something. They don't even have to give just out of the goodness of their heart. They can get my children's book.
Oh, good.
Gosh, I should have a copy right near me, but Well, I have that. So I okay. that's linked in my Instagram. If they go to my Instagram, I wrote an allegorical farm story that fights against climate alarmism, which is going to be the next thing.
It is.
So they're putting aside COVID.
Yeah.
And they're going to say they're going to blame every natural disaster on climate alarmism.
Yeah.
And they're going to use that as an excuse to take our freedoms. Mm, and so this is a farm story that combats that. And it's allegorical and it's really funny and it's fun for the whole family. So there's that. And then there's my school, thinkexodus.org. There's a place on the website where they can donate if they would like to donate. Mm-hmm. But mainly just share about it, pray for us. And if you have any kids that are 5th through 12th grade that you want to put in my enrichment program, that is $20 a month. Mm. And then our K through 12 program, which is fully accredited.
Yeah.
And that is Christian. And we have conservative teachers that are vetted. It's just, our fully accredited program is incredible. And we can take some state vouchers.
Wow.
So if you are in a voucher state, there is a possibility that you could get your, you have to qualify, of course, for your voucher in your state. But there's a possibility that you could get our fully accredited K through 12 for free. And all of that is at thinkexodus.org. And if you want to go to any of my Instagrams and follow me, it's Kali Fontanilla. KaliFontanilla, and I'm on all of them.
Yeah, we'll have it right on the screen when we upload this episode. So I was going to try and woo you into giving us an interview with Luna, but I'm not. I don't want to. I no longer want to.
We'll do it
to.
Next time.
Yeah, we'll do it.
It's next actually time. Really good to start with her.
Yeah.
And to have it pull it off like it's real.
Right.
And then I come in and I don't mind doing that. I would love to come back with you.
Okay.
You guys,
well, yeah, that'd be great.
I really enjoy these kind of podcasts. I do not like the high pressure interviews.
Yeah.
I want to be able to say
it's
everything
big
in context.
Stage.
Yeah.
Big
it's
stage.
Not, you know what? I was just telling my husband about that. I'm really, it's really, especially for something like this, black conservatism, it's really not that great to be huge in that.
No.
You know, it's just, but at the same time, it's important.
Yeah.
We need more voices, but there is the hate and the, and it's not fun.
In a world where the black leftist claims that the white man is out to get them.
Yeah.
The black conservative has both black and white people.
I know. It's bad.
It's interesting.
It's bad. And it's like, I've had people who are like, oh, you're just like, I've had some old friends that are on the left who are like, you are just doing this for attention. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah,
first of all, I'm 41. I never even, like, I could care. Like,
the last
I was sitting
I
in my
attention.
House and watched stuff. Like, that's, and secondly, if I wanted attention, I'm a great cook. I love my pets. I could do some like content about my dog and my cat, you know, like I could do stuff that's a little more, you know, this is not, it's not fun. It's not, you know, that's why it's so important to be around and have interviews like this and get around others that believe the same. So you can have some fun.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can have some enjoyment because it is hard. It is hard.
Because this stuff is like, I mean, like I was scrolling through your Instagram. There's a lot of jokes. There's a lot of satire and a lot of it. It's crazy to conservatives because it's common sense. It's like, it's common things. It's like, hey, why are we letting illegal people come into our country?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are criminals, right? Yeah. And then you see the real effects of it. I saw a video you posted of, I think it was San Francisco. And it's just literally, she was just listing stats about what Democrats have passed. And
it's desolate.
All the virtue signaling that they're doing that we see is complete foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
Is real, like it has real effects, real long-lasting effects.
Exactly.
People, tons of people, just strung out on drugs.
I know
who have children who will be on drugs, just in the system, and it's all because of this faux racism, climate change, COVID. Like
also their religion.
Yeah,
it is. It is.
They want to save people,
right?
And their saving sucks.
Yeah,
like. They really don't know how to help black people. They really don't know how to help drug addicts.
Right.
They're actually making everything worse.
Yeah. Well, guys, go to thinkexodus.org. Prayerfully consider donating to Exodus Institute. Definitely buy the book. I was just talking to Lonnie, my wife, the other day, and I was saying, you know, that the next generations, I'm talking about the children, our children, and then the other children, there's going to be a wide chasm.
Yeah.
between ideology and thought. Mm-hmm. And my prayer is that I would raise sons who'd be willing to go across the chasm to bring people over and not just stand firm in their stance, but to go off mm-hmm. and win people. Go over and win people to the truth. And so we appreciate the work that you guys are doing with your school, because that's what that is. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. So, Kali, thank you for joining us on this episode. It's very encouraging. Yes.
Yeah. I love coming on here. Yeah, so thank you
very encouraging. Thank you guys for the work that you're doing. Blessings to you and your husband. Guys, be praying for their family. And thank you guys for tuning in this episode of Black and Blurred. We are guaranteed to hear one of two things: our humble opinion
or the facts.
Holler at us. Turn it off.
I like it. You got a hat. You're messing up the timing.
No, I'm going to fade it in post. You're so ridiculous.
I
want to
fade it now. Let me do it
now.
That's
ridiculous. He does this every...